Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am joined by Paul Shapiro. He's an author. He's a CEO. He's a TEDx speaker. And he's also a fellow podcast host. So the pressure really is on for me to be on my A game today. Paul is a food sustainability expert and an influencer in the space, and we're going to cover everything from plant-based burgers to zero waste dining. But Paul, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much, Amy. It's great to be with you, and I am a fan, and I appreciate you bringing not just the A game, but the Amy game. So I'm psyched.
You're already beating me, dude. Stop. So I kind of gave away the punchline there and began to list off a bunch of professional markers for you. But let's rewind a bit and start at the beginning. Walk me through your personal and professional roadmap. Where do you think sparked your passion for environmental sustainability?
Sure, Amy. I am driven by a desire to try to save humanity from ourselves and also to try to save animals from humanity. So ever since I was a little kid, I always loved animals. I loved nature. And I remember when I was in fifth grade, you know, my parents sent me to this like science camp, like a summer camp. And it was out in the West, and I watched in Colorado these prairie dogs, and I watched and learned about their communities and learned about how they had an intricate society underground where they communicated with one another and they had different words for different types of threats that they faced. And I learned about the threat that they faced, not just from predators, but from human development by paving over their land and more. And it just felt very unfair to me. Felt like we were bullies who were trying to make ourselves more comfortable at the expense of everyone else. And that led me down a path where I learned more about the different ways that we make it harder for wildlife to exist, especially through our agricultural practices. And it became clear to me that, you know, we take up a lot of land, a lot of water, a lot of other resources to raise animals for food. And that is when I decided that perhaps shifting toward plant-based diets could be a really effective environmental remedy, in that we could use a tiny fraction of the resources that we currently use to feed ourselves. And that path led me down a food technology path in the end to figure out how we can replicate the meat experience for people without having to raise animals for food, because I essentially gave up on expecting that people were just going to be happy to eat bean and rice burritos and lentil soup, which I love. I think those are great foods, but it seems like a lot of people want meat, including environmentalists like us. And so we need to find ways to generate that meat experience for people without animals.
So let's talk about the Better Meat Company, the company that you're the CEO of. What's the mission? You know, talk to me a little bit about the product. Why would anyone want to grow meat or meat substitutes from plants and stuff like that?
Sure. Well, I mean, first, as a way to reduce humanity's footprint on the planet, as I mentioned, it just takes a lot of resources to raise animals. There's also a lot of concerns about the treatment of those animals themselves, most of whom are enduring lives that are so miserable that few of us would want to really even talk about it. And then there's a concern about public health and antibiotic resistance and pandemic prevention. In fact, the United Nations recently put out a report that is entitled Preventing the Next Pandemic, and they list what they think are the most likely causes of the next pandemic. And the top three on the UN's list all relate to meat consumption. One of them is just increasing demand for animal protein. The second is about intensification of animal agriculture, so raising more animals in smaller and more confined spaces. And the third is the bushmeat trade. So all three of the top reasons why we may have another pandemic relate to humanity's desire to eat meat. The problem is that meat consumption is going up, not down. We are eating more meat per person, not just because of population growth, but on a per person basis. Meat consumption is rising at a faster pace right now than ever before in the United States and China and India and Brazil. We're eating more and more meat than we ever have before. However, while people do seem to want meat, I don't think that people necessarily want animals to be raised and slaughtered. It's kind of like, I don't know, think about light. You know, most people, they flick a switch and they want the experience of having light, but they're not really thinking about whether that light is coming from fossil fuels or from renewable. Well, similarly, you know, a lot of people want meat, but if they could divorce meat production from animal slaughter, I think a lot of people would actually be pretty pleased to do that. And so at the Better Meat Co., what we do is utilize fermentation to transform common agricultural ingredients like potatoes and other common ag products within less than one day into meat-like food. So how do we do it? We're essentially subjecting these potatoes to a fermentation that converts the carbohydrates into proteins and creates a meat-like texture in this food such that when you eat it, it really does taste like a steak or a burger or a chicken nugget or however we manipulate it post-harvest. And again, this process takes less than one day because, you know, if you think about it, Amy, like, you know, or you think about like the size of the organism typically controls how rapidly they replicate. So an elephant takes a long time to make more elephants. A human takes less time to make more humans. You know, a pig takes less time. And then a chicken takes very little time to make more chickens. Rats and mice take even less time. But when you get down to the microscopic level, which is what we're utilizing, you know, the replication times are within hours, not weeks or months or years. And so we are able to run fermentations in which our microflora are replicating at such rapid rates, feasting on these potatoes, that they create meat-like products within literally only hours. And it's a very efficient process that takes almost no resources when you compare it to raising, let's say, cattle for beef, and creates products that really do taste like meat.
So, I mean, that is, first of all, fascinating. Second of all, insane. But what are some of the, you know, major differences for those of us who, you know, aren't super scientific between meat grown from like a cell or a plant-based burger? Is it just taste or texture?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, all right, let's put it this way. So right now, the way that we get meat typically is from inside of an animal's body, right? You go to the animal kingdom and you slaughter animals and you take their meat. So there are many companies like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods that instead are going to the plant kingdom. And they're taking plants like soybeans or yellow peas, and they're transforming them into foods that look and taste like meat. So, for example, if you take a Beyond Burger, the main ingredient is pea protein. Well, the way you get that is you grow a field of peas, you harvest that field, you mill it into a flour. So now you have a pea flour. And that's about 20% protein. So then it's not high enough in protein. So what you got to do is fractionate it. So you remove the fiber, remove the fat, you concentrate that protein down until it's called a plant protein isolate. That then is what you call a pea protein powder, what you would find, you know, in what bodybuilders would be supplementing in their smoothies, for example. The pea protein powder, though, while it's concentrated protein, it doesn't have the texture of meat. So you subject that powder to a process known as extrusion, in which the powder is heated up to really high temperature and pressure, and that changes the structure of the protein such that it no longer has a plant-like structure, and it's really a little bit more stringy like an animal's meat. So that's what's called plant-based meat. That's how you form the basis of a plant-based meat. What we are doing at the Better Meat Co., though, is not using plants to create meat. We're using microbes. And so what you're doing is, or what we are doing is, instead of having to, let's say, take a pea and transform it into something that has a meat-like texture, instead we're using fungi. So, you know, you think about it, there's the animal kingdom, there's the plant kingdom, and then you have a third kingdom altogether called fungi. And fungi are not in the middle of plants and animals. They are much closer to animals than to plants. That's why mushrooms have a much more meat-like texture than plants do, because they're so much closer to animals. In fact, mushrooms have been used as meat substitutes for centuries. In fact, fungi are so much closer to animals than plants that, like animals, they breathe in oxygen and breathe out CO2, whereas we know that plants do the opposite. They breathe in CO2 and sequester it, and then they breathe out oxygen. Also, like animals, fungi have to, you know, basically search for food. So plants, as we know, photosynthesize. They just put themselves in the sun, and they use the sun as their food source, whereas mushrooms and fungi, just like animals, have to actually search out and consume food. So we're dealing with an entire kingdom that is just much closer to animals when we're working with fungi. And that's really like the magic, or maybe more like the science, of what we're doing at the Better Me Co. is taking fungi at the microscopic level and running a very special kind of fermentation that causes them to convert their, what's called their mycelium, which is like the root-like structure of a fungus, and convert that into something that looks like meat while in the fermentation process. So there's very little processing post-fermentation. Really, the magic happens during the fermentation. And when we harvest it from our fermenters, again, in less than a day, the only real processing that we do is essentially removing water from it.
That is very, very cool. And I think it's interesting, as I'm hearing about, you know, the process, the first word that's popping in my head is just technology. You know, we have the technology to do this. And I was thinking about my bubby, you know, Yiddish for grandma. So my bubby was telling me a story a few weeks ago about on a Friday night when her mother would go out and get a chicken and slaughter the chicken in the backyard. And that's how they would have chicken soup for Shabbat. And I was thinking, like, how gross that is and how weird that is. Then I was thinking about my daughter and what she would think and what the future generations would think about how we treated meat. How do you think a future generation will think of how we consumed meat right now?
You know, Amy, I don't want to get too depressing, so I'm going to abbreviate my comments and simply say the following. Future generations will be horrified by how we treated animals, especially farm animals. And you think about chicken, like how your bubby treated those chickens. Well, yeah, you know, it's sad for that chicken what happened, but that chicken presumably led a pretty decent life until that final moment. Whereas nearly all the chickens who we use for food today are leading lives that they would have been better off never having been born. You know, just very briefly, I mean, they're raised by tens of thousands, crammed wing to wing inside of windowless warehouses where they live in their own feces. They never see the light of day. You know, when it comes time to slaughter, most of us don't even want to know what happens. So, you know, we're talking about just something that's really night and day different from what your bubby was doing. And these birds, you know, we treat them, honestly, worse than the most heinous criminals in our society. I mean, we wouldn't treat murderers and rapists like that and put them in that those type of foul conditions. And yet, the only crime that chickens have committed is not being born human. I mean, that's really the only crime they committed. And so, you know, I think that in the way that we look back in horror on the injustices that some of our ancestors committed, I truly believe that our descendants are going to look back in horror about how casually we permitted and participated in the torment of vast numbers of animals. And it's not the only thing they think they'll be horrified by. Of course, I think what we're doing to the climate will be another source of revulsion for them. But I really do think that overall, what we're doing to animals will not be viewed kindly in the history books of the future.
Let's talk about books for a second. I mean, you literally wrote the book on Clean Meat by Paul Shapiro. Whenever I have an author on, I always ask, because what was that process like? Was it hard to put all of your ideas and experiences and passion on paper? You know, you can feel it now when we're having this conversation, just kind of your wealth of knowledge and your passion for cleaner meat. But what was the book writing process like?
You know, Amy, I can tell you there were many challenges to the book writing process, and boredom was not one of them. So it was definitely a lot of work. But what I benefited from was that so many of the entrepreneurs and investors and scientists in this space were so generous with me. They let me come and tour their facilities and taste their products and learn about what their motivations were. And the thing that really was so illustrative to me about their work was that these are folks who oftentimes come out of the nonprofit sector, people who were involved in environmental and animal welfare charities, who decided that they thought that the best way that they could help fight climate change and protect animals was through food technology. People who basically said, you know, instead of trying to persuade everybody to eat less meat or to eat no meat, I'm going to create the next product that is going to, you know, render that that obsolete. And so it's kind of like if you think about what happened with whale oil back in the 19th century, you know, like all of our homes were lit by whale oil. And there were big concerns about the sustainability of whaling. There were even letters to the editor in the mid-1840s talking about the sustainability of whaling and expressing concern that we're going to render certain whale species extinct way back then, like more than 150 years ago. And what ended up liberating whales from harpoons was not sustainability concerns. It wasn't humane sentiment. It was the invention of kerosene. Kerosene was a cheaper, cleaner way to light our homes. And that ended up decimating the whaling industry very rapidly when kerosene was patented and commercialized. And then, of course, the kerosene lamp was replaced by the electric light bulb eventually. But you can see how technologies can have these disruptive effects and displace past industries by rendering them obsolete. And so the people who I chronicle in my book, Clean Meat, are the type of people who want to do what kerosene did for the whales, but they want to do it for climate and for animals and for public health by inventing these new technologies. And so, yes, the book was a challenge in a variety of ways, but it actually was one of the most inspirational and life-transforming events for me, because these folks were so generous with their time to allow me to learn about and see firsthand and taste firsthand what exactly they're doing and why they're doing it. And it was inspirational enough for me that I decided after doing it that rather than continuing to write about the work of the people I thought would save the world, I would become one of them myself.
So besides becoming, you know, a world changer and a CEO and obviously adopting a plant-based diet, you know, our audience are, these shows are geared primarily towards people who want to do better things for the planet, want to be more conscious consumers, want to reduce waste in their own homes, but may not know where to start and may get overwhelmed by the plethora of technology and invention and products and things out there. So what advice would you give to our listeners, those who want to do better? How can we do better at home? How can we do better in our own environments?
Well, one of the easiest things that we can do is simply to look at our own diets, right? So, you know, it's hard if you don't have the money to go out and buy an all-electric car. You know, it's hard to, you know, if you don't have the money to put solar panels on your roof. However, those are becoming cheaper, thankfully. However, one of the easiest things that we can do is simply to look at our own diets and recognize that diet is closely related to our impact on the planet. And that, you know, it doesn't mean that everybody is going to go out and become vegan, but it does mean that even enjoying more plant-based meals, like starting with a meatless Monday, or maybe doing like what New York Times writer Mark Bittman talks about, which is that he talks about vegan before 6 p.m., you know, where he eats vegan before 6 p.m. and after 6 p.m. he eats whatever he wants. Or, you know, maybe you want to go whole hog or maybe no hog and just become plant-based yourself all the time, before and after 6 p.m. But I think it's one of the easiest things that people can do just to start. And, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You can enjoy bean and rice burritos and eat lentil soup and enjoy hummus. They're great foods to eat. A lot of the world survives on them. But that's an easy thing to do at first. But then beyond that, I think that we need to create the conditions that lead to technological advancement to render this problem obsolete, like we were talking about earlier. And so that could mean either starting your own company in the space to try to advance food technologies that will free us from our dependence on animals for food. It could mean investing in these companies. It could mean joining one of the burgeoning companies in the space. There are literally billions of dollars being invested in these alternative protein companies right now. It's an incredible time to be in this space because the investor demand is white hot. And so a lot of these companies are hiring. And so I would recommend if you want to pursue a career in alternative protein, even if you're not a food technologist, maybe you're not a scientist, maybe you're an accountant or an HR person, and these companies need those roles too. So there's lots of ways to help advance this community and this movement of alternative protein, from investing into a company to starting a company to joining a company. I just think the space needs really bright, motivated people to help move it forward. So I'd welcome people to get involved. And if you go to the website cleanmeat.com, again, cleanmeat.com, there's actually a page called Clean Jobs on there where you can see what positions are open at many of the companies that I profile in my book and look at what positions they're hiring right now.
Everyone on this season of the show, everybody that's coming on season 4 that we're recording in the summer, is being asked this question. And Everybody has a different answer, and it's really interesting. I'd be remiss if we didn't bring up the pandemic. A, we talked about it a little bit before, but how did the Better Meat Co. pivot and adapt? How were you guys affected?
We were affected very negatively. So, you know, there were some good aspects of it, like silver linings in terms of increased demand for plant protein, which is certainly nice. But overall, the pandemic was a pretty negative experience for us. We were building a fermentation facility at that time, and it was very difficult and delayed the project very significantly, not only because it was difficult in some respects to get permits for various things we wanted to do since local government was shut down, but just getting construction workers was difficult. People were, you know, it was a big construction boom time during the pandemic. And then also every time, you know, a construction worker has COVID symptoms, none of them can work until everybody tests positive. That's days of delay every single time that occurs, whether there's positive or negative test results. So overall, you know, you want to do the safe thing, you want to do the right thing, but that meant delaying things. And, you know, when you're a startup, delays can be extremely challenging because you don't have, you know, a lot of money that, you know, can help you maintain your operations. But I'm proud to say we didn't lay anybody off. A lot of companies did. We did not lay any of our employees off. In fact, we actually added a couple of new positions during the pandemic. So we are grateful for that, but we still are behind our schedule as a result of it.
Okay, Paul, before we wrap up, I did want to play our rapid fire game with you. I think it'll be really fun, just kind of given your background and everything that you know. I'm just going to fire off 10 easy, quick questions, and you just say the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
I'm ready, Amy.
All right, let's go. One, what does a typical Saturday look like for you?
An elongated time at the dog park with my dog, Eddie.
What is one item that you don't leave the house without?
I wish it wasn't my phone. I'm sad to say it is my phone. But in addition, I would also say I almost never leave the house without my AirPods, since I hate having to hold my phone with my hand.
What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading a book by Buckminster Fuller, and it's like a 1969 book at which he is looking at what types of technologies can be useful for helping humanity into the future and creating a culture of abundance where we always have more than what we could ever possibly use. For those of you who aren't familiar, Buckminster Fuller is a really famous inventor who invented the geodesic dome. But he has a great maxim that I think about regularly, where he says that to change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And that's what I'm devoting my life to trying to do here.
What is one piece of career advice that someone once told you that really stuck with you?
The fact is that most of the barriers that we place on ourselves are mental in nature. Many people don't do something because they never try. They think that they're going to fail, or they think that somebody else couldn't do it. One of the things that I realized through writing my book, Clean Meat, was that many of the people running these alternative protein companies, including companies that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars, have absolutely no experience whatsoever before they took the plunge into entrepreneurship. They weren't scientists, they weren't entrepreneurs, they had no business experience, and yet they are successfully running companies that are really making an important dent in the world in a positive manner. And so I always tell people, you know, if you think you can't do it, you won't be able to do it. But you're never going to know if you can if you don't try. And so I would recommend to people that simply get on the field and start playing. You don't learn how to, let's say, play soccer by reading books about how to play soccer. You learn by getting on the field and playing. Well, see how good of a soccer player you are. Get on the field and start playing.
What is your most used form of digital communication? Are you a texter?
I actually am pretty averse to texting because there's such like an urgency about it. You know, people text you and they're expecting a quick reply. And a lot of times I'm in meetings or on calls. And so I don't see them and then it's too late. And, you know, so I really actually only rely on text for things that are time sensitive. So I'm so old school that my preferred method is email because I'll get to it when I see it.
What is one staple that's always in your fridge?
Well, it's not in my fridge because it doesn't require refrigeration, but one staple that I always have is nutritional yeast. So for those of you not familiar, nutritional yeast is a delicious inactive yeast that has a very nutty, cheesy flavor. It's high in protein. It's a complete protein, and it is a great addition to everything from tomato sauce to salad and more. I have a beef with it, though, because I hate the term nutritional yeast. It sounds disgusting, but it is how it's all marketed. Everybody calls it nutritional yeast. So that's how you have to look for it if you're in the market or you're on Amazon or whatever. But I have a proposal to change the name from nutritional yeast to golden flakes. So, Amy, if you can help out on my campaign here, I want somebody to start a company for nutritional yeast that is calling it golden flakes. And hopefully it'll become more popular because it is a wonderful food.
It is really good. I put it on my popcorn all the time.
Yum.
What was your first job?
My first job ever was selling roses on the side of the road as a teenager.
If you had a talk show, who would your first guest be?
Oh, well, could I have anybody? Like, is anybody going to say yes?
Living or dead. Yeah, anyone.
Living or dead. Wow. Probably, I'm going to turn it around on you here and give you a little piece of trivia here, okay? And then you'll guess who it is, okay? Who was the first woman, Amy, to ever win a Nobel Prize? Answer, Marie Curie. Now, for a little bit more trivia, the second time a woman won the Nobel Prize, do you know who it was? Again, Marie Curie. Now, the third time a woman won the Nobel Prize, who was it? Not Marie Curie, but Marie Curie's daughter. So this is like this riveting thing. And Marie Curie today, even today, is still the only person who's ever won a Nobel Prize in two different fields. I mean, she is really one of the most accomplished yet under-celebrated people in all of world history. In fact, she is attributed with probably saving at least 1 million lives during World War I because of her invention of the mobile X-ray so that they could do on-field X-rays on the battlefield, which really might have not only helped save 1 million Allied lives during World War I, but might have helped win the entire war. So if I could have anybody living or dead, I think I'm putting Marie Curie in the hot seat because I've got a lot of questions for her.
Okay, this is my last time having another podcast host on because I do not like being put on the spot. I can't believe I didn't know that. That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. You don't need to worry about being put on the spot. But I will say, you know, there's just an amazing history that she has that goes so much deeper than even what we're talking about. And it is a riveting life story that she had.
Weird transition and pivot here. What's your favorite vegetable?
Definitely sweet potato. I eat a sweet potato every day. I microwave them and then I just eat it like an apple. So I just, sit at my desk and just eat a sweet potato with my hand. And my coworkers get such a kick out of it because it is a literally daily occurrence that I'm doing it. That 1 year we did a Secret Santa at the Better Meat Co. And the person who got me knows that I don't really want a lot of things. I don't need to have a lot of material possessions. In fact, I have more than what I want. And so she got me what I still consider the best gift that anybody has gotten me in a Secret Santa ever, which was just a raw sweet potato.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Success for me would mean making the world a better place than if I hadn't been born. So I think about the fact that we are consuming resources all the time from, we are, creating a pile of trash. Even those of us who try to live mindfully, we're still creating a pile of trash behind us. We're hurting people's feelings. We're doing thoughtless things. We're creating pollution when we drive and when we fly. And so the fact is, in my view, that in order to justify our existence, we actually need to do a lot of good. It's not just minimizing the harm that we're doing. We have to actively do good and reduce suffering and increase happiness in the world to make the world basically a better place because we were born. Otherwise, it won't have been. And so for me, if I could think that the world had less suffering and more happiness in it because I had been born, because of how I had chosen to live my life, that would be the ultimate success.
I love that. Okay, so you talked a little bit about the website, but now is plug time. Where can our listeners find you and find out more about all of the awesome work that you're doing across all of these different fields?
That's so kind of you, Amy. You can just go to bettermeat.co. Again, that's bettermeat.co. That's M-E-A-T, obviously. And I'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us through there. And I'd love to hear from you. And if you're looking to work in the alternative protein space, hit us up through there too, because we also are looking for great people to join our team here at the Better Meat Co. and build a more sustainable food future.
We're so lucky to have industry influencers like you on the front lines, fighting the good fight against food waste and a lot of different social and environmental issues. So thank you so much, Paul, for sharing all of your experience with us. It was really inspiring.
Amy, thank you for having a platform that inspires people to get involved and make a difference for the planet. I'm grateful.